It's At the Letters for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Arden Swelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith are here. Our producers this week are Christian Ryan and Nick Ondrod. And Ben, we are both in Kansas City covering the Blue Jays series with the Royals here. We are two games in, just to put everybody at a place in time. By the time that you listen to this, you will have certainly seen the third game of this series, perhaps even seen the fourth game, because there is a bit of a quick turnaround there from night to day game as the Blue Jays get off the road on Thursday. So all kinds of maladies may have be stricken the Blue Jays between now and then. But for now, all we know is the very specific malady of Tuesday night, when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. committed an absolutely inexcusable error in the fourth inning, might have been the fifth inning, doesn't really matter, led directly to three unearned runs that lost the Blue Jays a ball game.
Off the end of the bat, Kiner Falefa with an off-balance throw, and Guerrero just missed it. And here comes Massey, and the Royals get a huge break.
Ben, you've had, I don't know, a night to sleep on it. You've had the morning to ruminate on it. How are you feeling now about what happened with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on Tuesday versus how you felt in the moment?
Well, yeah, it's, as you said, it's not an excusable mistake, because it's just a routine play. And, you know, this is not the kind of error where there's some sort of complexity to it. There's some wrinkle or nuance to it. It's a very simple play. Ground ball hit to the left side. Vlad Jr. has one job: get to first base, catch the ball. It was eminently catchable. I think any major league first baseman would make that play every time. Any professional first baseman, any college first baseman would make that play. Like, it's an easy play. It's just a very simple, easy play that he has to make and did not make. It's kind of the equivalent of someone hits a pop-up to short and Bobichet just drops it, or someone hits a fly ball to center field and Dalton Varsho just drops it. You have to make that play. He didn't do it. And then, of course, because the Blue Jays aren't scoring runs, it ends up getting really highlighted. And, you know, that's a play that I think we'd be talking about in any circumstance, but especially at a time that the Jays aren't scoring, it leads to those three unearned runs. And it's in the spotlight, as it should be, given the circumstances surrounding that error.
Yeah, particularly on an 0-for-5 night for Vlad as well, during a start to the season in which his OPS is hovering around league average. Just as far as the play goes, like, errors happen. And everybody on the Blue Jays, all 26 guys on the roster now, and whoever else is going to filter through, is going to make some sort of an error on a play that they would typically make at some point this season. Like, you play 162 games, like, these things happen. I think that the magnifying glass on this one is a lot tighter, just because it did lead directly to a loss. Now, if the Blue Jays get a big swing in the ninth inning and hit a two-run homer, and you know, you bring in, geez, I don't even know who would have been available at that point for the save, because the Blue Jays bullpen was so stretched on Tuesday. But if they win that game, it's not quite the same discussion. But they didn't. So this is what the discussion is, and it's a play that needs to be made 100 times out of 100 by a first baseman at the highest level. Vladdy wore it. He came back to the dugout, sat by himself. He was clearly miserable about what had happened to a man. I mean, every player and coach on the team came over and, you know, patted him on the back and tried to lift him up and, you know, tried to reassure him, because they've all been there, right? If you've been a big league player, you've had moments like that where you feel like you blew it, and you feel like you are the reason why, you know, your team is where it is. That is a terrible feeling. Like, if you just have, you know, some empathy for a second, that feels terrible. Credit to Vladdy for coming out quickly after the game and taking ownership of it. There's no excuses. No, the sun was in my eye, or no, you know, I stepped weird on the base, or it was a weird angle. None of that. He just said, I missed the ball, period. I just missed the ball. There was nothing else. Credit to Kevin Gausman as well for offering some just really level-headed perspective about it, saying like, hey, look, the game's hard. I've never played first base. I can't say anything about it personally. Obviously, it's unfortunate because of the timing and the circumstance and how it happened, but there's nothing more that I or Vlad can do about it. I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but it was along those lines of, look, there's nothing that can be done now. Like, there's no sense ruminating in it, sitting in it, dwelling on it. We move on. So, you know, I really do think that's the appropriate tack to take.
Yeah, there's no alternative. If you're the Blue Jays, you need Vlad Jr. So you can't just hammer him on it. You can't sit there and, you know, and try to make him feel worse than he already does. I thought Gausman's comments were great. I mean, that's the textbook reply and tone that he struck. And I agree with you, errors do happen, but I really think some errors are different than others. And if Vlad Jr. had, you know, I think it's almost different with like a throw, for example, where if he throws it across third, he's trying to, you know, get a base runner. Bobby Witt Jr. is flying into third base and he wants to get him and he just throws the ball down the left field line. That would be an error too. That happens. This to me is the kind of play that no big leaguer should ever miss. It is not an acceptable error just to miss that ball. He needs to get himself in a better position and make that play. So again, it doesn't change the reality of how to move ahead from this. And everyone's right when they say errors happen. You just have to let it go and you know, trust that Vlad Jr. will do more good than bad as the season progresses. But that particular play, no big leaguer should make an error on that play.
Don't want to harbor on this for too long because, as I said, by the time people listen to this, I mean, just who knows what kind of catastrophes you and I will have had to cover by that point, or potentially triumphs. That is also a possibility here. But just as we kind of zoom out on Vlad and the season that he's having, you know, here through the morning of April the 24th, he's sitting on a 681 OPS. That's actually above league average this year. Maybe we'll get to that a bit more later, just how suppressed offense has been in 2024, but that's a 102 OPS plus. He's also got a 108 weighted runs created plus. He's got three homers on the year. I believe he's about strikeout for walk as I rapidly try to pull it up. Right now, he's got 21 strikeouts, he's got 15 walks. So, you know, close enough. What do you make of just the performance from Vlad, the contributions, how he's looking at the plate, the season that he has had to this point?
Yeah. So, okay, if we set aside that one play, which, you know, okay, we've said what we need to. He absolutely has to make that play, no excuse. But then you look at the offense, it's disappointing. I mean, it's not good enough. He's been a little bit better than league average as a hitter. If you compare him to first baseman, that would probably be closer to below average for first baseman in this league. So, you know, for a guy who's in his prime, they need more. Now, at the same time, we're a month, 4 weeks into the season, 4 week sample. You're not going to overreact. You still expect good things from Vlad Jr. He's still impacting the ball hard. You know, we talked about his plate approach last week and how he can be at times an easy guy to pitch to if you get to two strikes and you just start locating sliders off the plate. Not saying that's an easy thing to do for every pitcher, but for some pitchers, some relievers, that can be an approach that works really well against Vlad Jr. So it's underwhelming. It's disappointing. There's still time left. I think that he's not the biggest problem on this offense. I mean, you could point to Kirk. You could point to Kiermaier. You could point to George Springer. All those guys need to step it up more than Vlad Jr. does. And I think that Vlad Jr. is going to have a good offensive season. But does he look like a superstar to me? No. To me, the superstar in the games this week is Bobby Witt Jr. He's the guy who's stepping up with his team down and getting a two-run double. He's the guy who's making great defensive plays. That's what a superstar looks like. And Vlad Jr., yeah, he's a good player. He'll be better than what he has been, but he's not playing like a superstar. He doesn't look like a superstar.
Yeah, you mentioned how we talked about the approach last week, and I feel the same, that it's just inconsistent. You see some really good plate appearances from Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and then you see some where he's chasing pitches where you just scratch your head and you say, like, how can this still be happening? And it can be like night to night, plate appearance to plate appearance. You know, John Schneider like pointed it out the other day. He said, look, yeah, I actually like Vlad's approach right now. I think he's had some good at bats. I think he's been a tick off and his swing has gotten a little big and a little long at times, but I've seen times where he's gotten into two strike counts and taken what he's given and like flicked a single the other way. You know, he pointed to, I think it was Vlad's first plate appearance against Bray Singer in the opener, and it was like 2-2 count. Vlad had gotten pretty deep into it, kind of got a pitch inside and like didn't hit it hard. It might have been, I don't know, 80 miles per hour off his bat, but he just took what he was given, did what he needed to with it, served a little soft single into the shallow outfield. And Schneider was kind of making the point that like sometimes that's okay. Like Vlad, that disappoints him when that's the result of his plate appearance because he wants to be doing more. You know, for as much as Vlad has fallen short of the like huge external expectations of him, he's also fallen short of his own internal expectations. Yeah. And he's open about that, that he is playing well below what he expects. And he's not getting the results that he believes that he's capable of. And he feels like he's not doing enough. Like, he has been open about that. You know, he's been open about the times when he hits a ball really hard and really far and doesn't come away with a result, and how frustrating that is. Like, you look at the game on Tuesday where Vlad's over five, he has this terrible error. You know who hit the furthest ball and the hardest hit ball in that game? It's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like, he hit one off Waka, I think it was a changeup, like 400 feet, and it falls into Kyle Isbell's glove at the warning track. He hit that ball like 110, hardest, yep, longest hit ball of the game, but in the box score, it's just an out. So it can be kind of maddening, obviously, for everyone who's watching it, for people like us who are trying to cover it objectively, for Blue Jays coaches who are trying to work with Vlad, and for Vlad himself. Like, it is maddening just like how inconsistent it is. You see the signs of good process and of him taking what he's given and not trying to do too much, and then you see the plate appearances where he's just chasing pitches that are never strikes. They're just ball to ball, and where the approach looks out of sorts. I think it's just, it's very inconsistent is the way that I would sum it up. And I would not be surprised, honestly, if he got really, really good or if he went into a deep slump. Like, I could see it going either way from here.
Yeah. And that's not what you want to be saying about a guy who's in his prime and who has reached really high heights before. Of course, everything we're saying now, I mean, you kind of want to view within the, you know, alongside the reality that this is probably the worst regular season game of his career that we're discussing. You know, to go over five and strike out a couple times, ground into a double play, and make just an absolutely atrocious error. Yeah, that probably is the worst regular season game he's ever played. And so he'll be better than this. There's no question about that. He's going to be a good major league player. He's showing that every single year. He is, his floor is a good major league player who you want in your lineup. And in this lineup, you know, that's a hitter at the top of your lineup and someone with the potential to be a lot more than that. But it's disappointing. There's no question. And we've watched Vlad Jr. for a long time now. The consistent part for him is he shows up and he takes the field and he gives you effort, but the results aren't consistent. And, you know, this is a results business. So he needs to show better results for the discussion around him to turn. And more importantly, for this team to start winning more games.
I really wouldn't be surprised if Vlad ended up with a season that looks like last year's, where he's like a 120 WRC plus guy and he's just a good player but not a great player. I also wouldn't be surprised if he ended up with like a 140, 145 WRC plus, honestly, and hit 35 bombs. Like, that wouldn't surprise me if he got to that point from here. Like, the talent, the potential is obvious. And it's not just me saying this. It's like literally everybody that you talk to in the game, all of our colleagues who have played this game at the highest level, everyone will tell you that he has as much talent as anyone innately, and he can do things that other players can't, and he has the potential to be one of the greatest players in this game. So if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. figures it all out and like goes gangbusters for the rest of the year, I honestly will not be surprised, but I also will not be surprised if he is just the good hitter, the good player that we have seen for the last year and change. I think it's all on the table.
Yeah, and yeah, I look at the production to this point in the season, like you said, a 102 OPS plus, a 108 WRC plus. I mean, if at the end of the year he's got 20-25 home runs with a 105 OPS plus, I wouldn't be stunned anymore. And, you know, I that's not what I'm expecting. I think he's going to do more than that. But, you know, clearly it's not just a foregone conclusion that he's going to be a Hall of Famer like his dad. He has to go out there and actually produce in ways that he hasn't, certainly to this point in this season.
Here's what I'll tell you. For the Blue Jays to be successful this year, they need more out of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. than they are currently getting. Like, the entire thesis of this season was we are betting on internal improvement. And specifically, we are betting on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. being better than he was last season. We're betting on Alejandro Kirk being better. We're betting on George Springer being better. None of those things have happened. Those three things have not happened. If anything, they've actually gone in the opposite direction. And look,
we are like 3.5 weeks in, right? Like, can't say that enough. It's not, you know, there's still, what, I don't know, 8 days left in April. I mean, like, we're nowhere near this yet. Like, being able to say, like, this is what the season's going to be, or this is what is going to happen going forward. Like, the Blue Jays, you talk to, like, coaches, and they're like, we're not even close to considering lineup shuffles yet. You know, like, we're still, we want to leave things as they are and let things play out. But like, for the Blue Jays to be successful this year, the production they're getting from Guerrero, Springer, Kirk, like, absolutely, like, imperative, critical, needs to improve. You can put Bo Bichette in that conversation as well, because like, his WRC plus is below 100, and obviously, like, there's a lot of confidence that he is going to come out of that. Yeah. But like, the Blue Jays, like, they can't get to the end of this season with their best hitters being Turner, Varsho, Kiner, Falefa. Like, you need Springer, Kirk, Guerrero, Bichette up top for this team to be successful.
Well, you mentioned Kirk, Vladdy, and Springer, right? And the fourth in that group was Dalton Varsho, who, hey, going into the season, Ross Atkins and Sean Schneider, they would point to, this is a group that we think can do better. And so far, they're 1-4. You can't go 1-4 as a front office, as a leadership group, and actually have the offensive turnaround that they needed. It's not possible. And so, they need to get better results from that group. It's not just on Vladdy, of course. They need better results from guys like Springer. And it's interesting. Like, I'm not saying, you know, that I would necessarily change up the batting order tomorrow if I was the Blue Jays, but it might be the day after. You know, it might be 2-3 days from now. Like, John Schneider telling us he wants to give it more than a month before they contemplate major structural changes to the lineup. And, you know, that's something that we can all kind of make a mental note of here. But man, George Springer, he has really underperformed. His OPS plus right now is 86. He has not hit for power. He's had some tough at-bats, sure, but he is not hitting for power. If I was the Jays, I would think about Justin Turner leadoff and Dalton Varsho cleanup. And it sounds like they're not at the point of doing that. But if I was them, I might be a few days away from taking a long, hard look at that.
Justin Turner leadoff. Where have I heard that before? It just sounds so familiar to me. That would be interesting. Like, you don't want to do anything that reads as panicky, and also you don't want to do anything that you give like 2 to 3 days of and you're like, uh-oh, this isn't working, we're gonna revert back. Like, I do think that,
why not,
like,
though? Like, I don't have a problem with reverting back after a couple of days. If there's a better option, then choose it.
I think that as a manager, like, you have to think about the personalities in your clubhouse. You have to think about confidence from your players. You have to think about their comfort. You have to think about how this will be received. Like, to me personally, I think it's early in the season for anything that could be read within the clubhouse as either panicky or a demotion, or, you know, anything that could negatively impact a player's psyche. Like, I understand, right? Like, it's not working. We got to make a change. We got to win games. We have to be urgent, et cetera. But I do think there are a lot of layers that go into making this decision as a manager when you are trying to manage 26 personalities in your clubhouse that aren't necessarily apparent to us looking from the outside.
I agree. And I think that's the way that Major League coaching staffs will look at it. And you don't want to be too jumpy or reactive in the eyes of the players. But you got to win games too. And they just gave away a game that they should have won. And you can't afford to do that many times. We talk about all the time how this is going to be a close race in the American League East. So do you want to wait 2 extra weeks for someone to figure it out? I don't know. Like, George Springer, if he starts hitting again and if his WRC plus jumps to 120, then of course he will be toward the top of that lineup. It is not a permanent demotion by any stretch. But, you know, if in a week's time, you know, I'm not saying tomorrow again, but if in a week's time, Springer, you know, he's 3-31 this week and Justin Turner keeps giving you good at-bats, I'd do it. Like, I don't think you have to wait until May to shuffle all this stuff around. And you got to win the games in front of you.
Yeah, I do think that John Schneider is telling us something by A, like what he said, and also B, just what the lineup looks like every day. That he feels that, you know, with the personalities in his clubhouse, now is not the time yep. to do that.
Clearly.
And I think he has the best read of anybody on that. I do think there are like little more subtle things you can do, such as Dalton Varsho now being an everyday player. And that's not something that he was at the beginning of the season, remember. So, and like, obviously he has earned that because he's just been on fire for 2 weeks now. I mean, six home runs in the span of 10 games. He had like a 1444 OPS going into last night and, you know, had another extra base hit. I mean, he's just having one of the better runs of his careers.
He got into this one, or did he? Did he get enough of it? Renfro is back, and it is gone. Another home run for Dalton Varsho as he just keeps hitting for power in the Blue Jays.
He's been undeniable. Like, he's broken down the door into this lineup, but he's now an everyday player. And you see in other players, you know, maybe not being leaned on and in certain situations. I think Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is seeing a lot of playing time right now because he's given you really good plate appearances and he's given you really good defense. And he's been like a really solid contributor for this club. So I do think there are more sort of subtle things that you can do in terms of deployment, in terms of even which pitchers see leverage, how much rope you give to starters. Yusei Kikuchi getting deeper into starts now than we saw him at any point last year. I think that's where you can sort of push things, but like an overall lineup reconstruction three and a half weeks into the season, that's a bit more dramatic.
I guess so. I guess it is, but don't your players have to understand too that, look, their compensation is in the form of a paycheck, and it's not an entitlement to be hitting in a certain spot or playing a certain number of days a week. Like, you know, to me, these guys, you know, need to understand that it's a performance business. It's a results business. And, you know, Yusei Kikuchi, just to pick that example, if he starts walking guys and he starts scattering and he's nibbling, well, I don't think he deserves to be out there for six, seven innings anymore. And maybe he's more of a five and dive at that point. To me, it has to be the playing time and the lineup decisions have to be responsive to what's actually happening on the field. And so, you know, personally, you know, and I know George Springer had a really good game Tuesday, and hopefully for the Blue Jays that continues. And he gets back to the form of being this really, really good player, which he's been for so much of his career. But if that doesn't happen, I certainly wouldn't be sitting there waiting 5 weeks into the season.
Ultimately, like, regardless of where Springer is hitting, where Vlad Bichette is hitting, like, the Blue Jays just need more out of their really, really good players. Like, that's just, and we said this coming in, like, this is what it's going to come down to. Like, we can spend all spring talking about Daniel Vogelbach and what he's going to bring, and we can talk about how Ernie Clement's going to make this team, and, you know, how many plate appearances does Davis Schneider get, and, like, having good supporting performances and contributions is important, certainly, but it always comes down to the guys at the top of your lineup who get the most plate appearances, who are capable of the most, who can be those like 135, 140 Wade runs created plus over the course of a season guys. Like, that is what drives your offense. And if you aren't getting that, you just are not going to score a lot of runs, and you're going to be in a position that the Blue Jays have been in now where they're scoring like five runs or less every single night, and their pitching staff has to be absolutely perfect, and their defense, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at first base, has to be absolutely perfect. If there is a, they are walking just such a tightrope in terms of execution and margin for error on a nightly basis, because like the best players on this team, the ones who are capable of contributing the most offensively, have not been in rhythm just yet.
Just one last thing on the lineup, okay? So, you know, we're talking about, hey, like, you know, is it a panicky move? You know, is it a lack of confidence in George Springer if the Blue Jays move him? The Yankees had Gleyber Torres hitting leadoff. He didn't produce. They moved him. I don't think that's panic. Giancarlo Stanton's a guy who's hit cleanup for a lot of his career. He doesn't produce. They bump him down. Rizzo doesn't produce. They bump him down. I don't think that means that Aaron Boone is losing the clubhouse or doesn't have enough respect for his players. To me, it's a results business. Springer not giving them results.
Granted, and I would just repeat what I just said, wherever they are hitting in the lineup, I think lineup construction is just like so overrated in terms of like what it means for your offense and how many runs you score. No, regardless of where they are hitting, your best players have to perform like players who are capable of being among the best in MLB, and they haven't to this point.
For sure.
All right, let's take a break. But when we come back, plenty more to talk about with the Blue Jays here from Kansas City, all that and much more when we continue on At The Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. Ben, I will say this. If the Blue Jays can figure things out offensively, they're going to be an awfully good team if they continue to pitch the way that they have. I mean, they are just getting some of the best pitching in baseball for a second consecutive season. It's kind of funny how it played out somewhat similarly to how it did last year, where the Blue Jays starters didn't get off to a great start, and then like two trips through the rotation just flipped a switch and were the best staff until basically the end of the season. It's been pretty similar this year, where the Blue Jays were a little shaky to begin the season from a starting pitching perspective, and then Chris Bassitt comes out and says he's disappointed in everybody, and all of a sudden everyone just reverts to being frankly elite since April 8th. So this is 14 starts now, almost three full trips through the rotation. The Blue Jays starting staff has an ERA of 1.94. That is second among all MLB starting staffs. Their FIP is third. Their strikeout minus walk rate is fifth. Their slugging percentage allowed is third. I mean, you can pick any statistical category you want. Blue Jays starters are within the top three or four staffs in the league. This is a group that is putting the team in position to win every single night.
Yeah, it's been the backbone of this team. I mean, it looks right now as good as it has at any point this season. I think that includes, you know, dating back to spring training when the rotation was really one of the big questions around this team. It looks elite. It looks like a frontline group. You've got some ace type starters there in Gausman and Barrios. You've got some really, really good number, I don't know, two to three types in Yusei Kikuchi and Chris Bassitt. And Yuriel Rodriguez looks good too. Plus, you have Alek Manoah, who I'm sure we can get to, you know, kind of percolating in the minor leagues and starting to make a stronger push for playing time in the major leagues. So this is really as strong a group as we've seen it in some time. And given that the Jays have not scored more than five runs in 2.5 weeks, they need it. I mean, this is a group that has really allowed them to stay competitive despite their offensive underperformance.
And the most important thing to me is that, like, these are all veteran dudes, right? I mean, in, you know, Bassitt, Kikuchi, Gausman, you got guys who are like mid-30s. Barrios is probably early 30s or late 20s. 29, right? Yeah, Yuriel Rodriguez, I mean, just beginning his MLB career, but it's like a 27-year-old dude, like had an entire career in Cuba and Japan before this. So these are all veteran guys, but they're all still finding like new ways to do it. They're all still evolving and getting better. Like, none of them are just sitting on what they do and saying, this is good, I'm content, this is what I'm going to continue to do going forward. Because at the highest level, I mean, the analysis, the scouting, just the pregame work, the way that teams use technology to assess what you're doing, it's at such a high level that you have to continue to evolve and you have to change and you have to try to stay ahead of it. So Chris Bassitt's a perfect example, is somebody who's like a different pitcher every time he goes out. And it's, you know, it's one thing to do that when you have like seven different pitches you can throw in a given night. But I mean, he just never approaches the same hitter the same way. He never approaches the same side of the platoon the same way, the same style of hitter the same way, from start to start, from plate appearance to plate appearance. His game planning, his preparation, his execution, it's at such a high level.
Yeah. Chris Bassitt will make just his second career start here at Petco Park. A terrific player here.
Swing and a miss. Bassitt gets him for the first out.
This even applies to guys like, yo, Jose Barrios changes his pitch mix this year, not using the four-seamer as much to lefties, develops that cutter, you know, is using the sinker slider a lot more effectively to them. I mean, he's changed who he is here pretty deep into his career. Yusei Kikuchi develops a changeup last year, new pitch for him. Now it's his second most used offering, and he's playing it really effectively off his fastball. He's getting a ton of ground balls with it. You know, he's just really suppressing hard contact with that curveball. So he's continuing to evolve. Even to Kevin Gausman, who hasn't looked like himself this year, a two-pitch pitcher. I mean, he throws a slider as well, but like, it's not nearly as effective as fastball and splitter. two-pitch guy, doesn't have his best stuff on Tuesday night, and yet here he is going from typically a high strikeout pitcher to all of a sudden a ground ball guy and working down in the zone and understanding the approach that the Royals are taking against him, getting a ton of ground balls, being efficient, getting deep into a start on a night the Blue Jays need him to, and on a night when he doesn't have his best stuff. I mean, that to me is just what's really impressive about this staff is how they continue to evolve.
Yeah, they definitely have. You know, Gausman too, he's really been ramping up in season. And I think, you know, I asked him this last night and he said that, you know, basically he's starting to get to the point that he's feeling good about where he's at. But even then, didn't have that really pinpoint fastball command that he sometimes does have in his best outings. And so you look at the delays in spring training. Of course, his spring training debut came in the very final game of the Grapefruit League. So, of course, it's going to take him a little bit of time to get going. You look at the ERA, obviously not pretty at this point, up above five. But he's starting to make those strides and adjustments, and he's had to do it, you know, in games that count. And I think now we're starting to see he's finding that tempo that he wants. He's finding the strike zone more consistently. And I really think from this point on, I would expect Kevin Gausman to be much closer to Kevin Gausman. I don't think that ERA is in any way reflective of the kind of pitcher that he is.
Swing and a miss. Strike three. Elevated heater gets him. Gausman strands the bases loaded. One hit for the Yankees, but no run.
The only way you can poke holes at the starting staff is the depth of it beyond the five guys or four and a half, however you consider Yariel Rodriguez, considering he's not fully stretched out. You're probably never going to see him throw 100 pitches in an outing, but however you consider it, the depth of this staff beyond who's in the majors right now was relatively thin entering the season and has thinned out in a serious way since. Wes Parsons, gone. He's a Cleveland Guardian. Mitch White, gone. He's a San Francisco Giant. Ricky Tiedemann, hurt. On the IL at AAA. He's actually in Toronto right now, getting checked out by Blue Jays medical staff. We don't have anything further on that, but not somebody who's going to be in the picture anytime soon. I mean, right now it is Paulo Espino and Alek Manoah. That is your major league starting pitching depth. Should you need a spot starter, should someone get hurt, should a situation arise. We've seen Paulo Espino, great guy, but 37 years old, throws like 89, not someone you want facing a lineup three times at the big league level. So there's a lot riding here on Alek Manoah as he continues to finish out this rehab assignment at AAA Buffalo and tries to prove that he can be an effective major league starter again.
Yeah, Manoah, you know, about to pitch either on Wednesday or on Thursday as we're about to record this. So I'll kind of hesitate from going too deep into you know, analysis of any individual outing here. But big picture, I think that he's in a position now where after making three and soon to be four rehab starts, he's kind of got the bulk, he's kind of got the reps in, which of course is a important first step. Now it's about, can he show the Blue Jays enough quality? We've seen him in the zone more. He's got to obviously continue on that track and stay in the strike zone. We've seen the velocity where it should be. John Schneider saying he really likes the shape and the velocity on his slider. So that's, you know, obviously his most important secondary pitch. That's a good building block for Manoah. And I think that we're getting to the point that he can start making that real push. But look, he doesn't have to be activated until May the 6th. So if the Blue Jays need to slow play this, I think they can. I don't think, you know, that they have to absolutely rush him back at all costs. You can slow play this until May the 6th, or honestly, even afterwards if you really need to.
Yeah, they'll play this out, and they will take all the runway that is afforded to them, and then they'll make a decision when they have to. And if that's a difficult decision, well, that's a good thing, right? Because that means that you have a lot of options. But the situation right now where you have Yariel Rodriguez looking excellent, by the way, through his first couple of big league starts, but he's quote unquote a starter, although it's really a piggyback situation with Bowden Francis. Like, I don't know how sustainable, how tenable that will be in the fifth spot in your rotation. You know, for starters, you're taking up two roster spots here, right? So you run into a situation where, like, if your bullpen's really tight and you're, you know, the day prior to a Yariel Rodriguez start, well, Bowden Francis isn't really available to you because you need to hold him back so that he can pitch behind Rodriguez. And then the other thing is, you've only got so many bullets with Rodriguez. Like, he's only going to throw so many innings this year. You know, you can only use him so much. So the Blue Jays are going to want to be mindful of that and want to manage that over the course of the season, and not, you know, burn him out too early, because this is somebody who you're likely going to want out of your bullpen down the stretch, and you hope you qualify for the postseason and into the postseason. So, you know, you're going to want to keep him fresh. So there is going to come a time where it's kind of push comes to shove and you're looking around for maybe more of a true starter in your rotation, or maybe you're looking to move Yariel Rodriguez into a different role. And you look at what the options could be at that time. If Ricky Tiedemann isn't, you know, back on a mound, isn't healthy, isn't being effective, it's kind of Alek Manoah, Paulo Espino, and like maybe a Chad Dallas. That's pretty much what you're at right now.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, pretty interesting once they get, you know, closer to that midseason point. You start trying to manage those innings for a Yariel Rodriguez. Yeah, I think that for the Blue Jays, they're going to have some moments where they do have to reach into that depth on the bullpen front, because you mentioned Bowden Francis, and he's kind of a piggyback there for the time being for Yariel Rodriguez. I think they're sort of starting to drift into a mode where, you know, Bowden Francis can be used on other days. And I think that's the way it should be, because as you say, otherwise you just handcuff yourself and you don't give yourself a lot of flexibility. So I think really starting now, they need to get to a point that they use Bowden Francis whenever they need to. And if that's on a Yusei Kikuchi day and it means he's not available the next time out and Yariel Rodriguez goes four, all right, you go to Nate Pearson, you go to Trevor Richards, you go to Yenesis Cabrera. Because I think that if you just put those two in tandem, it just kind of creates this rigidity that actually doesn't serve anyone.
Yeah, and you don't want to put so much pressure and so much workload on the back end of your bullpen this early in the season. Like, you got guys like Romano and Swanson who are just coming off the IL. They did not have spring trainings. You want to be cautious with them. You got Tim Mayza, who is second in the big leagues in appearances. Jimmy Garcia, who is third. Now, these are durable arms. These are guys who have thrown a lot of innings in the past, but like, you're going to want to lighten up on how much you're using those guys. Jimmy Garcia has been exceptional. He's been lights out. He's been one of the best leverage relievers in baseball, but you want his stuff to hold up over 6 months. Like, you want him to continue to feel as good as he is right now, continue to be as effective as he is. Like, if you have too many stretches where you're using him like three out of four nights, or, you know, back to back, day off, back to back, I mean, you are going to see the stuff deteriorate over time. And part of what's made him so good is that the velocity has been high and the break on his pitching, on his breaking pitches has been exceptional, and his execution has been really fine. So you want to leave him in a spot where he can perform like that. So part of that is having other reliable options in your bullpen. Part of that is also scoring more runs. So it's not like every night you're protecting a 2-3 run lead. Like, that's part of it as well, is that like John Schneider, Pete Walker have just faced so many high leverage spots this season. And when you got a game in front of you that you're trying to lock down, trying to win, like, you have to do everything you can to win that game, because the Blue Jays aren't going to be a playoff team with like a 6-game cushion. Like, this is going to come right down to the end, as it has for the last couple of years. But, you know, it is something to keep an eye on as well, as just how much workload you're putting on the back end of your bullpen.
Yep, you don't want to push it too hard. And at the same time, like, it's funny how the ebbs or the needs of a team can sort of ebb and flow in the course of a season. And right now they really had to lean on a guy like Jimmy Garcia, because Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson have just been coming back from injury. You don't want to overdo it with them. Of course, there was a period of time for a couple of weeks where they weren't available at all. So you really needed Jimmy Garcia then. So I think it's okay to roll with that now. But as you say, you can't do this indefinitely. I mean, he's at a pace to be used 75 times in the course of a season. It's probably not what you want to do with a guy who's this valuable. You know, this is not just, I mean, with Trevor Richards, if he pitches 75 innings, I think that's fine. But with Jimmy Garcia, you want him max effort. You need that velocity. And if they do make the playoffs, Jimmy Garcia is probably one of the pitchers who is logging the biggest outs of your season, or attempting to. I mean, that's the way this team is set up. It's Romano, it's Jimmy Garcia, and then, of course, it's your top four starting pitchers. Maybe your Yariel Rodriguez is a guy in the back end of that bullpen, plus whoever they trade for at the deadline. So that's kind of the core of your pitching staff, along with Tim Mayza, if he can get there. You don't want to burn those guys out now.
Yeah, this year's Jordan Hicks, whoever that's going to be. And then I think you really hope like somebody internally from your system steps up and becomes an option for you. Like a Tiedemann, great. But I mean, he's just not on a mound right now. So he needs to get healthy and then be effective. And then you got to think about things developmentally with him and what's best. But I mean, the Blue Jays expected Tiedemann to be like in the major league conversation last season. And then they expected him again this season. So this is somebody who they would bring to the big leagues and use if he's healthy and effective. We just haven't seen either of those things consistently enough over the last couple of years. Maybe it's like a Connor Cook, or maybe it's a Mason Fluarty. Maybe it's a TJ Brock. I don't know, but like it's like the conversation we've had on the position player side as well. Like the Blue Jays just need some better stories internally. Like they need some more players like creating that upward pressure on the roster and showing up and being capable big leaguers. They just really need to do a better job of supplementing from within if they're going to win sustainably.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's always a help. And it seems like they have that on the position player side. On the pitching side, you know, they haven't had as much of that. Their pitching staff, to me, still looks really strong. I think that overall, it's funny. The results haven't been there. If you look at just how many runs they've allowed, they're certainly not toward the league leaders. But I think when you look at this group, there's a lot of reason to be confident in what they can do moving forward. And even if there's not a ton of depth, having Manoa pushing back, I mean, that's something, pending how he does on Wednesday or Thursday at AAA. So I think big picture-wise, you know, if I'm Ross Atkins or John Schneider, I'm probably losing a lot more sleep over the offense than I am with the pitching.
All right. To that point, I've got like two or three just random things I want to throw at you. One of them is offensive. I want to get your take on this. Have you seen like how much offense is down across baseball this April?
Well, you know, you look at Vlad Guerrero Jr. with the 680 OPS that's above average. So, yeah, I mean, certainly I've noticed that.
You look at the Blue Jays offense as a whole with like a 107 WRC plus and a 106 OPS plus, their offense as a whole. So these league adjusted stats suggest that like what you've been watching, this maddeningly frustrating Blue Jays offense, has been above league average by like 6 or 7 percentage points. Like this is how much offense is down across the league. Like it's not just the Blue Jays. So like I pulled this stuff for the broadcast recently last March/April. So this isn't season long. This is literally just the beginning of the year, because like you want to take just the April stats because they're always suppressed, right? It's early, it's cold, hitters are behind the pitchers. Like there's a number of reasons why like offense is typically suppressed in April. So this is just March/April stats. Last year, the slugging percentage league wide was 405. This year it's 382. So that's a 23-point drop-off in slugging percentage. There is a 16-point drop-off in isolated power, and then less substantial drop-offs in batting average and OBP, but still like a 7-point drop-off in average, a 6-point drop-off in OBP. So like we are trending towards, if this holds up, and if offense increases at the same rate that it did last year over the rest of the season, like we're still trending towards like a 23-point drop off in slugging year over year. I don't have any answers for it, but it is absolutely peculiar that offense, particularly power, is down so much across the league.
Yeah, it's definitely notable, and it's good context to have, right? Because if you see someone slugging 385, 390, I mean, that's an above-average slugging percentage. So you want to be aware of that whenever you're looking at numbers. Yeah, it's going to go up a little bit. It always does. Similar to pitchers' velocity, there's some things that just have, you know, that shape to it. In the course of the summer, offense goes up, velo goes up, but not necessarily to the point that things transform entirely. I mean, this is still pretty significant to see offense down.
All right, another random thing I want to throw at you, and that's just from watching the first two games of this series, and you alluded to it earlier. Bobby Witt Jr. is just a superstar. Like he is just,
yeah.
He's probably the best player I've seen to this point this season. And we're about to see Shohei Ohtani on the weekend. So I don't know. We'll see about that. But like, he is electric. Like I'm convinced like this guy is going to win an MVP award sometime in the near future. Like he is such a good player. He does something every night that is like, just makes me like my eyes pop out of my head. I'm just like, whoa. The first game of this series, he had the hardest hit ball of the game. He had the fastest sprint speed of the game, and he
had the hardest throw of any fielder in the game. So like every time you look up, he is just, he's hitting a rocket somewhere, or he is like racing around the bases at like 31 feet per second, or he is showing off like just unbelievable arm strength after making a diving stop in the hole at shortstop. Like I just think that like that guy is worth every penny of the whatever it was, $282 million or whatever that the Royals spent on him. They got a bargain. Like he is just a superstar. He's gonna be an MVP before long.
Yeah, his tools are so loud. If there was a league better than MLB, he would be promoted to it. Like he's so good. It's incredible to watch. He's even defensively, right? You think of his offense, you think of the speed, but defensively, man, he makes some great plays over there. And I agree. This is what an MVP looks like. It's a really, really impressive combination of skills. You don't see it a lot in Major League Baseball. It's really fun to watch.
All right, one more. We talked a lot about Dalton Varsho this year, what he's done offensively. Obviously, like that has been unquestionable. He's been one of the better players in the American League, one of the better players in baseball. It's a great start. You hope he can sustain it. It certainly would be good news for the Blue Jays if he did. The thing that I keep getting back to is just like how superlative his defense is. He is probably the best outfield defender in baseball. Like the eye test will tell you that, the statistics will tell you that. And I think that a lot of that comes down to the jumps that he gets. Like he is just so instinctive and so reactive. If you kind of look at the Statcast stuff, like he actually doesn't take the greatest routes to balls. Like he takes pretty unorthodox routes, but like his jump and his burst, like his speed and just like his ability to react to balls off the bat is so elite that that allows him to overcome that stuff, and that allows him to make plays that other players can't. And that allows him to just get to balls that other players like have no hope of getting to. Like he makes really, really difficult plays look routine, and you see them on TV and you're like, oh, it's a routine out to Dalton Varsho, but it's a sort of play that like the league average or even the good MLB defensive outfielder, they're diving for that. They're laying out for it. They're maybe just making it, or they're making like a spectacular play on it. But because like Varsho's jumps, his speed, his reactions, his instincts are so good, he just kind of makes them look routine. And I think it doesn't get said enough that he is just a superlative defender.
Yeah, he makes it look effortless. And a lot of the time you'll see that top speed engage, but you know, you compare him to someone like a Juan Soto, maybe, who's, you know, obviously has many other gifts on a baseball field, but probably defense isn't one of them. And he'll make the routine play look difficult on defense. Varsho makes the difficult play look routine. And it's incredible. It makes a huge difference for the Blue Jays. And especially at a time that Kevin Kiermaier isn't hitting, that defensive ability actually allows the Blue Jays to improve their offense, too, because Varsho goes to center field. Boom, here's Davis Schneider in left, or Ernie Clement can go to left field, or maybe it's Kevin Biggio who's in the lineup in addition to, you know, one of those versatile players. So it allows them to save runs, and it also allows them to, in theory, score some runs, because at a time that Kiermaier's not hitting, Varsho can slide over to center, you're good to go.
Where do you stand on the sustainability of what he is doing offensively over the last 10, 12 days?
I think he can hit 30 homers. I think that, you know, I would expect him at this point to hit 25 homers. Last year he hit 20. 2 years ago he hit 27. Look, he's not someone who's going to go up there and run a 375 on base percentage in all likelihood. He'll still have his strikeouts. He'll still have his stretches where he doesn't look nearly as good as he has. This is the best stretch of his career, the best stretch of any Blue Jays player this season. But I do think he can be a very good offensive player who has real power. And so, yeah, I think 30 is in play for Varsho. And if you pair that with his defense, this is a guy who should end up at the bottom of some MVP ballots.
Well hit to the opposite field. Varsho racing back. He caught it. Another great play by Dalton Varsho.
Boy, you got a great.
I think that the results will kind of come and go. Like he's going to be streaky. Like I just think that that's the kind of player he's going to be, and he's going to have, you know, his times where he's like on setting the world on fire, like he is now. And I think he's going to have like his slumps, like he had over the essentially the entire first opening road trip that the Blue Jays were on when Varsho did not perform very well offensively. Like I think the thing that he's kind of figuring out is that if he doesn't tinker a bunch when he slumps. Like if he doesn't start changing his swing a whole bunch, or like going back to a leg kick or back to a toe tap or trying to change a million things, killing himself in the batting cages. Like if he just stays consistent and just like trusts his process, which he knows works, and just sticks with his approach, he'll come out of it quicker. You're going to fail a lot in baseball. Like things are not going to go your way. But the one thing that has been consistent for Varsho when he's been going poorly at the start of the year and when he's been going really well lately has been the swings, the takes, what he's swinging at, the area of the zone that he's focused on. And like no player is ever going to be perfect with what they lay off of and what they go after. But Dalton Varsho's cut like close to 10 points off his chase rate from where he was over his career to where he's been this year. And you kind of like, you pull up the pitch charts on Savant and he has just like narrowed his zone so much to that kind of like belt to knee middle in area where like he really does a ton of damage and where he just hooks pitches, into right field or over the right field wall, with a really high exit velocity. I think that's really what is just underlying his success right now and the run that he's on. And, I don't think he's always going to have like right now, everything that he barrels just finds a gap or everything goes over the wall. It's not always going to be the case. Like sometimes you're just going to miss it. You're going to fly out to the warning track. You're going to hit one right at a guy. You're going to hit one foul, whatever. Like things are going to happen. It's not always going to be this good, but I do think that like if that approach stays the same, if those swing decisions are consistent, I think that Dalton Varsho can have a really strong offensive season.
Yeah, I think that's on the table, and the Jays need it honestly at this point, because you know it doesn't look like, based on the early few weeks, doesn't look like there are going to be five breakouts on this team. So if you get one, then you take it and you hope that he can actually deliver on some of the promise that he's showing.
Yeah, that would help. Anything else from here in Kansas City that you want to highlight before we say goodbye?
Well, I do want to touch on just the AAA bats, right? Because this is a topic that I think is understandably on the minds of some fans and certainly on the minds of some within this organization, including John Schneider, who's very well aware of the kind of damage that Spencer Horowitz and Aurelvis Martinez and Addison Barger are doing in AAA. So I think it's kind of worth just touching on that and maybe, you know, especially in the context of a major league offense that's struggling, just discussing for a moment what it would take for those guys to get to the major leagues, how close we think they are. I mean, I look at this group and I think it's great to have them there in AAA. It's great to have them pushing toward the major leagues. I don't necessarily think that the time is now to promote any of those three, but I think you're one injury away from calling up a Horowitz or a Barger. And I think in the case of Aurelvis, you want to see him work on his defense before he gets to the majors, but let me throw that at you and see if you sort of view any of that differently with respect to those three minor leaguers.
Yeah, I think the first thing you need is an opportunity in the big leagues. So like Kevin Kiermaier leaves Tuesday night's game with a hip issue. You hope he's okay. You hope he's able to play through it. But if he goes to the IL, like I agree with you, I'm going to Barger. And I just think that like that's the guy who you, because he can play the outfield. Aurelvis Martinez does not play the outfield. Aurelvis Martinez may be hitting better than Barger right now, or you may like what he's doing right now better than Barger right now. But if you have an opportunity for an outfielder, Barger's the guy. Bring him up. I don't know that he's playing every day, but you are picking your spots for him. And he's kind of getting his feet wet at the big league level. The first baseman goes down. Spencer Horowitz should be the guy. If a second baseman goes down, it's a little different because you have so many players that can fill in there. You have such a glut of those type of players between second and third. You can cover things a bit easier, but I mean, I'd be getting close to trying an Aurelvis Martinez. Like I think Aurelvis Martinez will play for the Blue Jays this year. It's just a balance, right? I really do. And I think that if anybody is capable of like a Babe Schneider arc, like we saw last year from Davis Schneider, where somebody comes up in midsummer and just sets the world ablaze for three straight weeks, I think Aurelvis is that guy because he can be very streaky. He has a ton of power. If he comes up and he's getting challenged with a bunch of fastballs because he's new to the league, he could easily like hit, you know, six homers in 3 weeks. Like that's just not out of the question with him. He just hit six homers in a week in AAA, right? So I think Aurelvis will play for this team at some point. Is an opportunity for him right now. Obviously, you want him playing every day right now, so he could set the world ablaze again this week. I don't think you're forcing him into the lineup until you have an opportunity. But if you have an opportunity in the outfield with Kiermaier being down, bring up Barger, see what he can do.
Yeah, and with Aurelvis, like, he needs to show that he can field the ball. He's made 5 errors in 15 games at AAA. To me, development can happen quickly. You don't want to say, it's not like he has to stay in purgatory for 3 months and play errorless baseball, but he's got to put together 2-3 weeks where he's really consistently making the plays that he should make as a professional at that position. And if he does that and keeps hitting, then by all means, make the call. I mean, I think that you want to find ways to get offense, but you got to balance it. And John Schneider made this point that I think was a really good one, where he's saying, look, you need the whole player. You need someone who can do different things for you on a baseball field. And we saw Vlad Jr. make a very obvious mistake, right? You can't have a first baseman who's dropping routine plays and a second baseman who's making 5 errors in 15 games and expect to win at the major league level. You just can't. So to me, Aurelvis has to show some more defensive consistency before he gets the call. But Barger, yeah, I'd call him up today if Kiermaier needs to go on the IL. Horwitz, you know, if Vogelbach, you know, pulls a hamstring, boom, Horwitz, like, call him up today. I think those two guys are ready. And I think with Martinez, you just got to see the defensive consistency.
Well, and those two guys are like 24, 25 as well. Or Elvis Martinez is like 22. Right. So yep. Very impressive what Martinez is doing at AAA, but still a very young player. And as you said, like, still some development to be rounded out there. As we just saw, errors can lose you games in the big leagues. So Aurelvis Martinez, like, could force his way to the majors with his bat. But if he comes up and he makes a couple of errors in his first week of games, like, that could lose you two games. And so right. You do want him to be well-rounded and capable, and you want to have confidence putting him in different positions when you bring him up. So his time may not come until summer, yeah. But yeah, you know, when you, like you said, Barger, Horwitz has already made his big league debut. And like, shout out to him, by the way, because like, he's not getting talked about a lot at AAA, but like, he's leading off for the Bisons. He has a 488 on base. Yeah. they probably played like 20 games. I mean, that's absurd. Like, that's ridiculous. I understand there's ABS down there and guys are kind of gamifying that system a little bit, but I mean, nearly 500 on base. My goodness. And then also the cool thing about AAA this year is we have access to the hard, like, the exit velocity data. So you can pull this stuff up on Savant this year. You look at the most balls hit 105 plus at AAA in 2024. It's Coby Mayo of Baltimore at the top. And then it's Aurelvis Martinez right behind him. Mayo has 15. Right. Martinez has 14. And not far down that list, Addison Barger, he's in the top 10. He has 10. So these are guys who are doing a good job of getting to their pitch and doing a lot of damage on it when they get to it. That's what you want to see offensively. But of course, as you said, it really is a lot more that goes into being a successful big leaguer than just hitting the ball hard.
Right. Second base is a tough defensive position, and you want to do what's fair to Aurelvis too, right? He's 22 years old. You don't want to destroy his confidence. You want him to succeed when he gets to the majors. So that's a consideration. But one thing that's not a consideration, just worth saying here, because these rules are complicated and change over time, but service time, not a factor here, because if the Blue Jays call up Aurelvis tomorrow and he stays in the majors, that's no difference to his eventual timeline to free agency than if they call him up on September the 1st or September the 15th. So at this point, it doesn't matter. It's really a question of his development, his readiness. So we can set aside the service time stuff, which is great. It becomes a real baseball discussion and what the Blue Jays need and what Aurelvis or Barger can do.
100%. Ben, you and I have another game to go cover. And then another game after that. Blue Jays is about to play two within the span of like 36 hours. We are halfway through the Royals series right now as we sit here. Series is tied. See how it plays out. And then, it's only the Dodgers in town on the weekend. So that'll be interesting.
That's right. It will. I will just say this super quick. I know we got to run here. But yeah. Hey, for fans going down there, you know, enjoy Shohei Ohtani. If you want to boo Shohei Ohtani, look, that's your right. I will just say this. One, he didn't promise the Blue Jays anything. He didn't promise the Blue Jays a single thing. And it was his right as a free agent to explore every option and to make every trip and to listen to every offer. And I think it's the responsible thing to do to consider every option that he had. So I don't think he did anything wrong. And even if you do want to boo him, he's kind of showing that he is someone who is very capable of tuning out noise, as we've seen in the last few months. So I don't think booing is going to accomplish much. So, you know, boo if you want to boo. That's your right as a fan. But to me, Shohei did nothing wrong with respect respect to the Toronto Blue Jays, of course he's going to listen to their offer. If you want to boo someone, you know, boo Ross Atkins or boo, you know, any boo, I don't know who, but Shohei didn't do anything wrong.
Boo the video editor who pieced together Yusei Kikuchi pitching him on the multiculturalism of Toronto.
Yeah. Right? You know, I don't know who, you know, it's okay to be mad. I'm not saying don't be mad or don't be frustrated. Of course, that's a natural reaction, but I'm just not sure that Shohei did anything wrong.
Please don't boo the video editors. They work very hard. They work long hours. It's tough making content these days. So I say that in jest. They do great work. But I think you make a great point about Shohei and just like the weight of everything that has gone on with him over the last 6 to 8 months. I mean, my goodness, from you go back to like the injury that he suffered right before his free agency. Like that's a dramatic major event in his life, and then obviously like the biggest free agency of all time in baseball history, and then obviously everything that's been going on with his translator or his interpreter Ipe, and you know, the gambling scandal that continues to play out. This is a guy who has had immense pressure, immense expectations, immense spotlight. I mean, every distraction in the world that you could imagine, every reason in the world for his performance to be negatively impacted, considering everything that's going on and swirling around him, not only in the United States, but internationally in Japan as well, on multiple continents. And here he is with a 202 weighted runs created plus. He's already been worth 1.5 wins above replacement, and he is only 25 games into his season. He is just an exceptional performer.
Yeah, he's the best. He's the best, and booing him is not going to impact his performance. So, you know, I'm looking forward to watching what he can do. I don't think booing will impact him, but hey, that's the voice of the fans, right? Say what you got to say, but it should be a fun series regardless.
Well, the atmosphere is going to be incredible. So really looking forward to that one. Want to say thanks to our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. As always, thanks for their work. Want to say thanks to all of you for listening. Appreciate you being with us all year. And that's going to be it. He's Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. We'll talk to you next time on At The Letters.